Madam Secretary, how surprised were you? Hamas has won a big victory. Some people are calling it a stunning victory. How surprised were you, and is the ball in their court?
Well, these are the first really free and fair elections for a Palestinian legislature, and I think the results were somewhat unexpected. But it just shows that I think the Palestinian people took full advantage of their democratic opportunity. They voted in incredible numbers, maybe 80% is one of the estimates. And they also clearly voted for change. They wanted a new kind of government, and we respect that. I do think that it bears saying that any government for the Palestinian people is also going to have to deal with what I believe are their deep aspirations for a peaceful life. And we believe that that peaceful life can only be attained for Palestinians and Israelis through a two-state solution. And obviously, to have a two-state solution, you have to recognize the right of the other side, of Israel in this case, to exist. You have to renounce violence and terrorism. You have to disarm militias. Those are obligations that Palestinians have undertaken, and the international community will expect those obligations to be met.
Just as a follow-up, given Hamas's position on dealing with Israel and Israel's position dealing with Hamas, not to mention the U.S. position on Hamas, is the peace process either dead or is it at least on the shelf for a good while now?
Well, we will see, because the Palestinian people, I do think, voted for change, and I think they voted for government that perhaps would not bear the scars of corruption of the last 10 years, the Arafat period. But I'm quite certain that they retain their aspirations to have a peaceful life. And so the international community is going to be prepared to move forward on the roadmap. But moving forward on the roadmap means that you have to acknowledge the right of Israel to exist. It means that you have to renounce violence and terrorism. And it really does mean that you cannot have one foot in terror and one foot in politics. So there will be some choices that Hamas has to make.
So you won't join the prediction that U.S.-sponsored peace efforts will have to be shelved for a while?
Well, I think the President said it best today. He said peace is never dead. Peace always has a chance when there are people who want to pursue peace. But the terms on which peace can be pursued are very clear. I just was on a phone call with members of the Quartet. The United Nations, Russia, the European Union, and the United States form the Quartet for Middle East Peace. And we were in firm agreement that the Palestinian people deserve a peaceful future. They deserve the kind of peaceful future that the roadmap can give them. But any government is going to have to be committed to those principles of the roadmap.
So you'll still offer the roadmap. Now, we're hearing from some Arab moderates that the U.S. and Israel blew it, that over the past 14 months since Yasser Arafat's death, that maybe the U.S. and Israel should have done more to help President Abbas. Did the U.S. blow it?
Well, I've heard a number of Palestinians say that, Palestinian Fatah say that they have to assess what this means about their relationship to the Palestinian people. I think this was about governance. I think this was an issue of the legacy that Yasser Arafat left of corruption and violence. After the Gaza withdrawal, unfortunately, the Palestinian Authority was unable to establish even simple law and order. And I think for the Palestinian people, this was unacceptable.
Did we help as much as we could have?
I think that the United States did a lot. I can remember, I think Charlie may have even been with me, when we negotiated the Rafah Agreement on freedom of movement, when the Israelis withdrew from Gaza, giving the Palestinian people freedom of movement. But this isn't a time to try and assess in any sense blame. The Palestinian people went to the polls. They want to change. But I'm quite sure that what they don't want changed is their chance for a peaceful solution. And that's only going to come through the establishment of two states.
Dr. Rice, put on your professorial hat, if you will, for just a moment to think about democracy, which America really wants to sponsor and encourage, including in the Middle East. But in Iraq, the results could be Shiite Muslims and the government who might sympathize with Iran and might end up being anti-American. And now in the West Bank and Gaza, we have a Hamas government, it seems. So sponsoring democracy is dangerous.
Well, I certainly wouldn't think we would be fearful of democracy. What is the alternative? To say that we prefer tyranny? that we prefer for people to live in repression, that we prefer for the people who lived under Saddam Hussein to continue to fill up mass graves because this dictator oppressed and killed people wantonly in accordance with his whims. No, the United States has to stand for democracy. And yes, there will sometimes be outcomes that surprise us. There will be sometimes outcomes, as the President said earlier, that are a wake-up call to leaders. But democracy is always preferable. And what has happened in the Middle East is that over 60 years, there has been a freedom deficit. And there has been an absence of political space for legitimate political activity to take place. And it's clearly left a vacuum. But that is being remedied. You talked about Iraq. What I see in Iraq is Iraqis, Sunni, Shia, Kurd, and others trying to come together in a national unity government that will represent all Iraqis, a government based on principles in a constitution that I think we would be proud of as Americans. But I would just note, democracy's hard. It's not easy. We've been through our own struggles with democracy, and we probably ought to be a little bit more tolerant and a little bit more understanding of the struggles of new democracy, because certainly with America's history, we have no reason for arrogance.
Charlie. I'd like to switch gears a little bit. We can talk about tolerance. Let's see how much tolerance you have on Iran and on changing the perhaps the way we reach an outcome on Iran. You don't want, the whole world seems, doesn't want Iran to have nuclear weapons. Even the Russians and Chinese don't. Yet the Russians and the Chinese don't seem quite as eager to be, have the matter referred to the Security Council as the U.S. and its European allies. And there is a Russian offer that's still up for discussion. Are you willing, if Iran finally says, yes, we'll take the Russian offer, are you willing to let that be the solution and not ask for referral, or do you plan to continue to ask for referral even if they take the Russian offer?
Well, the Iranians changed the conditions under which we're operating when they walked out of the talks with the Europeans, but also when they ended their suspension on enrichment and reprocessing and started breaking the seals that were there to keep them from using this equipment, which is related to the development of nuclear weapons. So the condition has been set. And perhaps the Europeans have said it best, negotiations under conditions in which the Iranians have broken seals and are determined to return to reprocessing doesn't make much sense. Now, we've been supportive of some of the ideas that the Russians have had. We've hoped that the ideas that the Russians had, that the Europeans had, would convince the Iranians that they could have peaceful nuclear energy in a way that dealt with the proliferation security concerns of the world. But they've not been willing to take that. It is time to refer this case to the Security Council, because every time we get a little bit close, the Iranians start finding a way to say, well, maybe they will negotiate. But they showed their true stripes when they walked out of the talks, when they broke the seals, and when they said they were determined to return to enriching and reprocessing.
If you've tuned in late, this is a CBS News radio interview with the Secretary of State. Dr. Rice, how confident are you in the intelligence that you've seen, doubtless, about Iran's nuclear program? Is it more reliable than what the U.S. had about Iraq?
Well, I think that we are confident that we and everyone around the world seems very concerned about Iranian activities that could be leading to a nuclear weapon. This is not just the United States that's making a case that there are deep concerns about what the Iranians are doing. In the history here is that for 18 years, the Iranians hid activities on enrichment and reprocessing. They didn't voluntarily then give up the information. They were found out when dissident groups pointed the IAEA to those facilities. Dr. Mohammad al-Baradei has made very clear that he's not getting the answers from the Iranians that he needs to complete his investigation of what is going on there. And I would just note that even the people like the Russians have structured their civil nuclear power plant, it's called Bushehr, with the Iranians in a way that would take the fuel back to Russia, because no one trusts the Iranians with this technology. So this is just a matter of the United States and everyone believing that the Iranians are clearly up to something.
Still, one day you might find yourself personally at the UN Security Council, as your predecessor Colin Powell was, presenting an intelligence-based case And a lot of credibility was lost after that.
Well, let's remember that that was an intelligence case that was made from the sources of not just the United States, but many other services around the world. It was a case that had been the case that led the Clinton administration to use weapons against Iraq in 1998. It was the case that had led to multiple resolutions against Iraq, 17 in total against Iraq, sanctions against Iraq. Yes, the intelligence was flawed, but the intelligence was flawed because you had a very closed regime that was determined not to answer the just questions of the international system about its programs, and that was hiding the activities in which it was engaged.
Charlie?
Dan started this interview north of our border. I'd like to switch to the south of our border. We've got a lot of problems, it seems, with Mexico. A lot of illegal crossings, people who want to come here for various reasons, drugs. A tunnel was discovered just the other day. I know that border security is Department of Homeland Security's bailiwick. But what's the diplomatic piece? How is this government, the Bush administration, getting along with President Fox? And after that, even further south in Venezuela and Bolivia, you have governments that, if they're not going along exactly the way you want, seem to be going in a direction very much against what you'd like. How do you assess the problems there?
Well, on Mexico, we do have a good relationship with Mexico. I think it's as good as it's been in a very long time. But border security is all of our responsibility. And in my talks with the Mexicans, I've made very clear that the United States expects its laws to be respected, expects its borders to be respected, expects the Mexican government to make clear to its population that legal migration is the key here, and that illegal immigration is not an entitlement, that in fact we are going to enforce our border. Now, the president is someone who's long been interested in immigration issues as a former governor of Texas. He believes in humane treatment of migrants. He believes, as he said in his discussion of a temporary worker program, that there are economic aspects that have to be understood here. But everybody believes that our security needs to be respected. And in fact, to go to the broader point, Charlie, I think that while, yes, there are some complicated relationships in the region, I think we only have to look back 20 years or so and look at a region that was where there were civil wars all over Central America, where there were juntas ruling in parts of the region, where no one would have thought that you would have 34 democracies out of the 35 at the Organization of American States, the only one unable to take up its seat, Cuba. We don't have a problem with governments across the political spectrum. Whether a government rules from left or right is not of concern to us. We have excellent relations with Brazil. We have excellent relations with Chile, both left of center governments. The issue is, do you rule democratically? And there are cases of governments, particularly in Venezuela, cases in which one has to be concerned about democracy. But we look forward to working with anyone who wants to have a constructive relationship with the United States and to rule democratically.